When Scott asked me if I wanted to be introduced as Deborah or Debbie, I said, Debbie, unless you're mad at me, and I gave him the choice. So I guess I'm doing okay today. So far, I'm good. All right, so I was asked to give a brief overview of what AZA's role in welfare is, what our view of animal welfare is. And obviously, it's a central tenet of the Association of the Zoos and Aquariums. Let's see if I get this right here for advancing. Okay. So AZA identifies the provision of best possible welfare for all animals as one of its highest priorities. We have several mechanisms in place to ensure that AZA members proactively identify welfare as their top priority also. We have accreditation standards, we have an animal welfare committee, and we have a variety of scientific advisory groups. Now, we talked about a little bit earlier, Ron talked about how some of these topics are going to just be repetitive. We're going to keep talking about the same things. And one of them is the evolution of the animal welfare field. It's just growing by leaps and bounds. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about how we've started our animal welfare committee, some of these other programs, and where we want to go. And this meeting is just an incredible meeting to forward that thinking. So thank you very much, Ron, and everybody at the zoo here for doing this. So accreditation standards. As you know, most of you know in this room that AZA has a variety of accreditation standards. We have one very specific one that talks about how member institutions should develop their process for identifying animal welfare issues or concerns. And to support that, we have the Animal Welfare Committee has created a review process guideline, which is a very thick document to help institutions do just that. We also have the presentation of animal policies, a lot of different policies. But when you think about these are very specific standards and policies relative to animal welfare, the heart of AZA standards are all revolving about animal welfare, whether you're talking about standards for exhibit sizes or quality, environmental quality, all of those have to do with welfare at the heart of it. So talk a little bit about each of those three things, about the Animal Welfare Committee in itself. It was established in 2000, and it has a variety of tasks and different things that it does on a daily basis. However, three of the things that they have been charged with is to ensure that animal welfare continues to be a central tenet for AZA members and our animal programs. Defining animal welfare, if any of you have tried to do that, I'm sure many have, that's a more difficult thing to do, and that's kind of an evolutionary process also as things change in the field as we learn more about the science. And also measuring animal welfare. So talking about those three things a little bit, going into that, and still within the Animal Welfare Committee. The Animal Welfare Committee oversees animal care, the development of animal care manuals. Now, these animal care manuals contain a lot of information, not necessarily all directly related to animal welfare, but again, the combination of all these components put together all contribute to the welfare of an animal. So animal care manuals are guidelines that specify AZA accreditation standards. They're created by a variety of different professionals, whether it be biologists, veterinarians, nutritionists, the reproduction physiologists, people that specialize in all different components within the manual. They're based on current science, technology, and best practices. As they are developed, they need to be updated every 5 years, so it's going to continually evolve on that end. They're intended to help ensure that the highest quality of animal care and welfare are applied consistently across our community, and to help us continually raise that bar. Again, the evolution process of continuing to advance animal welfare. They are made publicly available now on our website. If you go and look at them, you can use them. We've had a lot of the European associations ask for specific copies of the animal care manuals, and now we've made them public on our website so that they can have them. We've received very good feedback on that. And they are management approaches and procedures. They're not exclusive. They're adaptable by species or taxa as they're developed. So what might work for one species or taxa might not work for another, and so we can develop different ways of getting across the messages that are important. Ron mentioned in his talk that the standards are oftentimes minimal standards. And they are. That's the truth. In AZA, our standards say you must do this. Well, wouldn't it be great if you did that? And this is an opportunity to do or say just that. They're guidelines. Standards are certainly identified within the animal care manuals, but this is each taxon or animal program's opportunity to say, we recommend that you do this. You must do this, but let's go higher. Let's do something different. So just to give you a quick overview, several of them have been published within the last year. Our animal programs are really jumping on board now that they've seen that they can actually publish them. There's been a lot of changes over the last several years, apparently, on how to get them published and how to get them out and so forth. But there are several that are published, several more that are in one phase or another of being completed, to the point where our office is becoming inundated with them. We're not keeping up at this point. So moving on from there, we talked a little bit in the two previous talks about what animal welfare is, defining animal welfare. Again, some of the same components, physical health. Ken was talking about or referenced Appleby's work that talked about body and coping. And physical health certainly fits in that. He talked about nature and environmental conditions or habitat structures, looking at that. It's also a combination not only of physical health, but also of psychological well-being. So addressing motivational needs, some of the things we've already heard, providing the animals with choice and control, matching the environment to the animal's actual natural species-specific behaviors or adaptations, and developing and using the animal's cognitive abilities. Those are all vital things that need to be considered with animal welfare. And then measuring animal welfare, which is a whole other task. And to maximize welfare, the integration, coordination, measurement, and evaluation of numerous factors, including those listed there, should be considered for individual animals. Again, we talk about species, conservation, species as a group, but as we know with animal welfare, that's an individual measurement, and that can change. There's no single measurement that's going to work for every single animal, so you have to be able to adapt for that. One of the things the Animal Welfare Committee is tasked with or does very well is engaging our members to identify and apply animal welfare assessment tools. They're working on different tools to help those members do that, that are also flexible and adaptable for species. Developing animal welfare research projects to investigate more what's going on with the different animals and species in our care. And to address not only internal animal welfare issues within our accredited zoos and aquariums, but also external animal welfare issues that we all know exist outside of our accredited institutions. Like we talked about, animal welfare is not assessed as a group. It needs to be assessed as the individual animal. And it looks different for different species. It's relative and it's not absolute. Range is on a continuum for good to poor. However, there's no line between good and bad. So how do you measure that? How do you look at that continuum? Typically, what we've done in the past is we've looked at the negative aspect of welfare. We think of stereotypies and all the negative things that we can see or we worry about on the behavior of the animal. Focusing on the negative end is a little bit limiting in terms of behavioral measures. Typically, we don't really recognize the positive ends of that. And so if we don't look at what the positive sides of welfare are, how do we recognize what's working? How do we develop a recipe to improve things? And so there is a whole nother end of this continuum that we need to focus on. And we're doing that more and more now, and part of, you're gonna hear a little bit more about this study. Kathy Carlstead's coming up next, I believe, who's going to talk more about this AZA elephant welfare study. And Beth Stark Posta has a poster. Wow, poster. Go see the poster. That's awesome. This study is an incredible opportunity. It's an incredible growth study where the entire AZA population of elephants is included, looking at welfare along a continuum from positive to negative, the whole continuum, assessing a wide range of factors and animal responses, and identifying the keys, factors affecting welfare. So I'm not going to talk more about that. I'm going to let Kathy talk about that. And then also, as I mentioned earlier, the scientific advisory groups. They collaborate with academic and science communities to increase the use of science in all animal welfare. And outcomes from these groups, these SAGs as we call them, often ensure animal welfare research needs, developments, and advancements are continuously augmented, that evolution process yet again. We have a variety of SAGs, or scientific advisory groups. Not all of them are directly related or specify animal welfare, such as look at the behavior SAG. That's great. But we talk about enrichment. It has direct applications to animal welfare. All of these SAGs have direct applications to animal welfare. When we combine all those things together, it gives us a nice overview, all-encompassing viewpoint towards achieving good animal welfare. So I'm wrapping up with just coming back to the main point of the talk, which is welfare is a central tenet of the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. All these things combined together help us put animal welfare forward as one of our central and primary things that we strive for. We have resource-based and outcome-based things that work with this. Again, we talked about accreditation standards, policies that are out there, the Animal Welfare Committee, the SAGs, the animal care manuals. These are all things that are available to our membership to help them continue forwarding animal welfare within their own institutions, within their own animal populations. Outcome-based is being able to assess those individual animal physical well-being and mental well-being, addressing both the internal and external animal welfare issues, and promoting and supporting and conducting research based on animal welfare. So that's a quick overview of what AZA believes, what we are promoting to our members, and I would be glad to answer questions or talk to you later about them. Are we answering questions now or later? Okay. Terry.
I have a message for you to bring back to the great leaders in Bethesda. That message is two things. Number one, it's high time that the funding mechanisms that have been identified in recent years, while conservation is critical and important, begin to fund some basic research which relates to welfare. Mm-hmm. And welfare owing to research itself is neglected and not prioritized in the funding. The second issue is, I think that the AZA issue, and I know they're thinking about this, mm-hmm. I'm not the only one saying this, there needs to be more science and more welfare among the topics of the National Conference, even though I know the zoo director is a thousand things that ought to be at that conference, more marketing, more development, more everything. But I think we're beginning to see a diminishing of that focus, and when we see the enthusiasm we have a it tells you that it is an important issue and ought to be given a little higher priority at AZA than that's the problem.
Well, and I agree with both of your points, and I think our department is in the same way of thinking. We've become much more involved in the Animal Welfare Committee. My being here is testament to that because I personally feel extremely strongly about what you're talking about. Yeah, well, thank you, and I agree with you. Funding, as we know with the government right now, that's going to be tough no matter which way we go. But this elephant study is really exciting that we're doing this.
I'm really talking about private funding that's right. Available now, and also do the conservation
challenge. No, the specific standard, one, because it's very difficult to do that. The Animal Welfare Committee is trying to develop different assessment tools, like I said, that's adaptable and flexible for the individual animals as well as species. That hasn't been done yet. But the only specific standard is that you must assess welfare of your animals at some point and address the concerns and issues and show how you've done that.
Let's take Ingrid's question, and then I think we're going to ask the speakers to take a seat after the session, after their presentation, and at the end have questions that can be directed to the entire panel of speakers.
Okay,
but
Ingrid?
Let's take Ingrid's question.
Yeah, I think it's great that the AZA's trying to make sure if the institutions, the accredited institutions, are showing that they have a concern or doing something about animal welfare. What I'm concerned about is the changes that we have in the SSP programs where now a group is the only one that requires a non-member participation. Considering that the vast majority of former They can go to the venue.
Yep.
And this has been a real setback in the welfare and overall standards of those areas. And I think I speak for many in saying it's been incredibly discouraging to.
And we've heard those, we've heard other concerns with changing over the way that we're managing our, the animal programs now. When we look at population sustainability, all of those programs that you said that are switching over to either yellow or just simply red stud book programs are not sustainable for 100 years. They're just not going to be unless we do something. So we're going to lose them completely. So it's almost a hard choice of do we lose them completely? Or do we trust in our animal program leaders to work with those people that they trust? And that's a hard thing. That's a hard line to follow. And we're aware of the situation, and we're aware of that concern. WCMC, which is our Wildlife Conservation Management Committee, is also on top of that. And they've developed different strategies within the WCMC to oversee each single animal program and work with them independently. So we're trying to address that as best we can in the greater scheme of trying to sustain our populations overall with great genetic diversity.
Okay, I'm going to ask Debbie to have a seat.
All right.
We can take more questions. Thank you, Debbie.
Sure.